you could be anywhere doing anything, but you're hanging out with us, and we appreciate that. So wherever you're listening and however you're listening and watching, we appreciate you guys for listening and watching. So with that being said, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of the Game Plan Podcast live stream. Alex Goodwin is my name. You can follow me on Twitter at Alex Goodwin TSM. Again, that's on Twitter at Alex Goodwin TSM. Kennedy Miller is still out cruising the high seas. So my main man with the plan, Sinlaw Preps, Lamar Gafford. My man, how you doing today, dog?
Man, I'm good. I already actually had to do some on-air training today because I was on the TV stations here in Alexandria. But, hey, I got some voices here just to go ahead and continue to go well at this.
Hey, man, I appreciate you. We appreciate you, Lamar, my man. Also, thank you guys for listening and watching on our live stream on YouTube. Don't forget, leave your questions in your comments in the chat. You never know. We might just read it out live here on the show. Now, to get to business, game two of the NBA Finals. The Miami Heat have evened up this series, tying this thing up 1-1, winning tonight 111-108. Shamar Moore, better known as Gabe Vincent, led Miami in scoring with 23 points, 8-for-12 from the field, 4-for-6 from the three-point line. They also helped out with 21 from Bam Adebayo. Jokic led Denver with 41 big ones. So, Lamar, what are your first thoughts from game two?
Well, good thing there. We kind of figured out that Spo was going to make the necessary adjustments in order to try to get his team a chance to win game two. And, of course, one of those adjustments was, you know, having Kevin Love, putting him in there, you know, at least try to get some, generate some offense, or at least try to at least do some more things here. But overall, I guess, you know, the other guys kind of shot a little bit better. I mean, you have Max Strus. We were talking about him going 0-for-10, but the confidence that Jimmy Butler had in possibly going to him. I mean, I heard at one point in the broadcast, I think Lisa Salters had even said that, I don't even care if you miss the next 10 shots. If you're open, we're going to find you. And that still gave him the confidence just to do pretty well early on. Hit 4 3-point shots. I think he ended up with 14 points. So that really helped him out too. But also Gabe Vincent, you see that he's continuing to play pretty well as well. You know, some of the other guys, like you said here, Duncan Robinson, he also had a pretty good night with 10 points. You know, you would kind of like to see some more here for Caleb Martin, but at least they got a little bit more from the undrafted guys, the other players outside of Jimmy and Bam, just to kind of lighten their load a little bit.
I think the biggest thing to me, what I really came away from in this ball game, was that, number one, had Miami not won tonight, this thing really would have been over in like 4 games. Because in a night where all your refund checks hit, basically, Gabe Vincent knocks down 4 threes. Max Strus knocks down 4 threes. Duncan Robinson gives you 10 points in the fourth quarter, right? All money you was not expecting. You know what I'm saying? But you got that tonight. They made 17 of 36 from the three-point line. You shoot almost 50% from the three-point line, and you lose, yo, it's a problem. And to answer the first question here in the chat, Mark, nah, I was not convinced Miami was going to win. I was not, even down to the very end. When Jamal Murray cut it to 6 with 2.5 left, I was like, man, if they lose this, if this goes into overtime, if it had it gone into overtime, I think Denver would have won. But that's why, for me, I would have liked to see it on that last possession, Denver take that timeout. Because my thing is, you can't take the timeout with you to the next game. You know what I'm saying? It's like sometimes, you know how people still criticize Nick Saban for sometimes not using all of his timeouts going into halftime, not being as aggressive as he could be. They don't roll over. You might as well go for broke. You might as well put your players in the best situation to get the best shot that you can to tie the game, right? Like, I just feel like that last possession was really kind of disjointed, and Jamal Murray took a really tough shot. Now, granted, Jamal Murray takes and makes tough shots consistently. But with the game on the line, is that what I want to lean on? Not particularly. You know what I'm saying? And I think for the Nuggets, one of the it's weird to think of that Nikola Jokic had 41 points, but this is not the kind of Nikola Jokic game you want, if that makes sense. And it might sound weird because you think of, God scored 41 points. What more do you want? Well, that in some ways is playing into what the other team kind of wants, right? Because Jokic, with his best skill being that he is a phenomenal passer, him scoring 41 and only having 4 assists, that in some ways, some people, you might be able to argue that might have been one of the keys to the game, because Jokic assists on 44% of Denver's made baskets. So to only have, only for him to only have 4 assists, that means these other guys are having to create their own shots, or it's more difficult for them to get their shots. And when Jokic creates those shots for them, it's easy layups, wide open threes. And even if they do miss a shot, sometimes you're going to the foul line, right? So the amount of offense that Jokic creates for others, that's really, I think, important as well. And I think part of what got them out of rhythm, at least Denver offensively, and Lamar, we hate it, that damn zone.
Yeah.
Dog, I think it was that damn zone. And I'm like, yo, man, how long, bro, question, bro, how long do you think they're going to be able to make it playing this zone?
I mean, well, I can say this. I mean, the Mavs rolled all the way to the 2011 championship by using the zone against the Heat. So, I mean, there is some advantages to it, but if like you said, though, if Denver continues to shoot well, if they shoot well, if they get into a rhythm, they're going to have to bust out of that zone somehow.
Yeah.
And that's just something. And you know what? I mean, it's a good thing that you kind of mentioned about, you know, the rhythm as far as like with Jokic and all that stuff. I'm looking at some of the box score right now. So you see, as far as the assists, Michael Porter Jr., only 5 points. He was 2 for 8. KCP, only 1 for 4, only 6 points. You know, in those games there, as you mentioned, I mean, if he would have, if Jokic would have been more the passing guy and all that stuff, those guys had an easier time of at least having a little bit of shot making here in the first game. I mean, obviously, Michael Porter Jr. really wasn't that great with his shot making, but he did have 14 points. KCP really wasn't that great with his shot making, but he did have 7, but at least he was 3 for 8. So those are some of the things, like you mentioned. I mean, him being a good passer and him getting them out in open space, it makes everything flow very well. Jokic had 28 shots in this game, which obviously, again, he's making over 50% of those. He had 41 points. That's good, but that's really a stark contrast of the 12 that he had in game one, where he was getting everybody else involved into the game.
And I think some of what happened to Michael Porter Jr. and, as Mark, like you say, Aaron Big Back Gordon, you know, I've never actually thought about it in like, Aaron Gordon's back is quite wide. You know what I'm saying? I think part of what happened was inserting Kevin Love into the starting lineup, right? And what Aaron Gordon got a lot of in game one was easy post-ups against Max Strus, against Shamar Moore, against Caleb Martin. And he was able to just handle them, just get the ball low block. They just dump it down to him, 1-2 layup, you know, 1-2 get fouled. You know, it was pretty simple, pretty easy. When you put Kevin Love in there, although the Heat are still a smaller basketball team, just height-wise, than the Denver Nuggets, he helps you a little bit more because now you don't have a much smaller person guarding Aaron Gordon. And now you allow Jimmy to match up with Jamal Murray, right? Which...
Mm-hmm.
If they can kind of sustain something, being able to guard Jamal Murray for long stretches, they might have something. You know what I'm saying? Like, that helps. That really helps in getting more length on Jamal Murray. Because Max Strus and Caleb Martin and Duncan Robinson, bless their hearts, they were giving it the old college try. But they ain't have a snowball's chance of hell of staying in front of Jamal Murray. You know what I'm saying? So, like, though, it's really the little things that Eric Spoelstra did. Those little things. And, you know, might I add, although Jimmy Butler didn't shoot well tonight, like Jimmy Butler was 4 of 14 midway through the fourth quarter. He gave them big shots and big buckets when it counted. So, when you know, because there are some moments it feels like, all right, it's Jimmy Butler time. Knocks down a contested three. Gets an and one. Then, when Murray cuts it to six with 2.5 minutes left, Jimmy Butler knocks down another big shot. So, although he didn't shoot well or didn't have the type of Jimmy Butler game you would think he you would hope he had, he would have, he showed up when it counted. And my thing is, from a team like Miami, if the refund checks are going to hit early in the game and, you know, just hold water long enough, you know what I'm saying, to when the big check comes in on the first of the month, boom. Yeah. If that's their plan, I don't think it's, you know, I don't think it's going to work for them to get four wins in this series. But for them to get one, maybe two, for them to make this a competitive one, this is going to have to be their recipe. Now, Lamar, how do you think Denver adjusts, you know, to some of to the insertion of Kevin Love into the starting lineup?
Yeah, that's going to be a good question. And besides, I mean, this is the first time that we're really talking about Kevin Love's defense during his career ever. And so you're probably going to have to probably exploit that. We know Kevin Love is really not a great defender, and they're just going to have to exploit that. You know, maybe by post-ups, or maybe at least by blowing past them, you know, or just getting angles and stuff like that, just in order to help yourself out in that, in those cases. I think what Denver has is good. It's just that they're probably just going to have to try to exploit them, attack them a little bit better on the defensive end on that case there, because make them hide Kevin Love as far as like as a defensive player or something like that. Make the Heat hide him or something like that. So I think they're all right now, but just tweak a few things here and there, and that's about it.
And you know, I think we have the tendency as, you know, observers to overreact after every single playoff game. You know what I mean? But I think the big change for Denver has to be just a little bit more focus. And that's an odd thing to say about Denver this postseason, given how locked in that they've been. But coming out of the gate tonight and midway through the fourth quarter, when they kind of lost their composure and the Heat took a double-digit lead, right? They kind of let their foot off the gas. The concentration slipped a little bit, which we haven't seen from them all postseason. And on top of that, defensive rotations. Like, Max Strus, those four threes he made in the first quarter were wide open, were busts. Gabe Vincent, some of those pick and roll coverage busts. So if they can clean up those busts, they should be okay. Like, make the Heat take and make tough shots. And I will say, the one thing that has this entire postseason that has given me serious cause for concern for Denver has been they don't have a great individual perimeter defender. They don't have a guy that you can just put on the other team's best perimeter player and say, go handle it. They don't have that guy, you know. So because they don't have that guy, that, you know, it puts a lot of weight on team defense. So when you have those busts, you don't have a guy that can just wipe those away. You know what I'm saying? You don't have a guy. And like, also, Jokic is nobody's rim protector. It's a weird thing to think of. At 7 feet tall, however many odd pounds, you don't have a guy that's a rim protector back there. So if you're gambling, you know, on to get a steal and you don't get it, that's basically a layup at that point. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So it's for them, it's really some of those small things. And if Denver isn't making those shots, right? Michael Porter Jr. is not knocking them down. They don't really get too much from KCP on a night like tonight. Can they get the stops?
Right. And by the way, congratulations for the Miami Heat. Your first win in Denver since 2016. So congratulations to y'all for that.
Man, So going into game three, I'm still – well, I'll ask you this, Lamar. Going into game three, like series-wise, are you still feeling pretty good about your prediction?
I still am. I mean, to say for everything here of what the Denver Nuggets didn't do right as far as like focus and all that stuff, they were still right there in a possession away from tying up the ball game in the latter parts of the game. So I still think that's why I wouldn't hit the panic button yet if I'm Denver. I mean, I still think it's going to be five at this case. You know, again, maybe again, we still have to see the Jimmy Butler blackout game pretty much, where I still think that it could go to six if that's the case. But I still think that Denver gets it done in five at this point.
And I think Miami's fortunate to be able to tie this thing up, given the way that Jimmy Butler played. Granted, he gave you big shots at the end, but the idea that you've had two so-so Jimmy Butler games and you split on the road in Denver, which is a tough place to play. I don't think they had lost a game since like right around spring break. You know what I'm saying? So the fact that they were able to make that happen, they should go home with some measure of confidence, some measure of it. But how far that takes them, it remains to be seen. And my big thing about this whole, the whole, because I remember you mentioned, make them have to try to hide Kevin Love. The problem is they have so many defenders they have to try to hide. They hide them all by playing that doggone 2-3 zone. Right? And the thing about that zone tonight was, in game one, they went to that zone and Jokic would just catch it at the free throw line and then dissect everybody from there. Layups, threes, it went from there. This time they didn't let Jokic catch. And that zone took Jamal Murray out of the game. So what's Denver's adjustment to that, right? How do you make that work? And just, again, my thing is I don't know how long you can go to a zone like this and play a zone like this when you got three-point shooters, mm-hmm. when the Nuggets have three-point shooters. Now, it's a make-or-miss league. If they miss them, okay. But you're still playing with fire, with that level of firepower that they got over there.
Right.
So
interesting.
That it will be. So, folks that are still here, still in the chat, throw us your questions, throw us your comments. It's that part of the show. We're going to answer your questions, folks. Hit us up.
You know what? Going with the NBA, I was actually looking at something just before the show. We were talking about some of the picks as far as, like, you know, the mock draft and everything. A couple of things really stood out.
So,
all right. Obviously, one of them that does not stand out is the Spurs getting big parlay. I mean, we already know that. But two guys that are, I guess, in this mock draft are named Kobe and who the Utah Jazz are thinking about getting at number 9.
Who?
You want to take a guess?
Nah, I got nothing. What's up?
All right. Think the most Utah pick that they probably can get as far as, like, somebody that could market Utah and all that.
I mean, I would say Grayson Allen, but I know his ass ain't in this draft.
Nah. But you're getting closer on that one. He's from Kansas. Grady Dick. Yeah.
Wow.
So they got him. They got him as far as like in the mock draft guy. So obviously, again, white guy, Utah. Why not, right?
Bro, that sounds like somebody that's about to run for Congress. That sounds like one of them people who take pictures in, like, take them Christmas card pictures with him, his wife, and their kids with all them AR-15s. That's mm-hmm. what that sounds like. And they live on one of them big ranches or something in Arkansas. That's, hey, wow. Man, you know what else made me realize I'm getting old, dog?
What?
I saw this thing where they were, like, athletes named after famous musicians, right? And this is, like, 5-6 years ago, right? D'Angelo yeah. Russell, named after D'Angelo, the singer D'Angelo. And D'Angelo Russell was born 9 months after D'Angelo's album Brown Sugar was released. Mm. Right? So, we know it was cracking. Now, we're in 2023. And you know what name I continue to see pop up over and over and over again in college basketball and college football?
Lay it on me.
Omarion.
You know what?
I'd have seen an Omarion Hampton, an Omarion Miller. I've seen like three or four Omarions.
We actually got a guy that I'm covering right now. His name is Omarion Ford.
It's spelled the same way like Omarion?
Yes. Yes. And also we just got done with a basketball. Like, I kid you not. His nickname is Diddy, but very good basketball player. He was our all-Sinlon MVP, Omarion Lissard.
His name is Omarion, but his nickname is Diddy?
Yes.
Why is his nickname Diddy?
I don't know why is his nickname Diddy. I never asked him that, honestly. But, yes, Omarion. That is his given birth name.
Lamar, one of these nights when you out here at the games, you know, doing your journalism thing, you need to ask his mama. Find his mama in the stand somewhere. Ask her, was she a B2K fan? Was she at them Scream tours? You know, was she at the Millennium tour? You know what I'm talking about?
I should have asked his daddy. His daddy is actually the assistant coach for that team that he was on.
What's his daddy's name?
His daddy's name is Mike. And actually, he had a big... So the crazy thing is, he had a big brother by the name of Michael. So his big brother was named Michael Jr. And obviously, his big brother plays nowhere near the same as Omarion plays. But, like, his big brother was 6'8", I think about 260. He got on with Rhode Island, unfortunately. It didn't work out and everything. He made the move back. Omarion's more of a guard, 6'1", could jump out the gym and everything else like that. But, yeah, crazy, isn't it?
Bruh. Look, I'm going to say this. As long as these folks ain't laughing at these kids named Omarion and Jadakiss and Biggie and Tupac like they was laughing at my man Lil Jordan Humphrey who used to play for Texas, like that, at a certain point, that felt uncomfortable. Right, like white folks is really out there. Yes, folks, his name really is Lil Jordan. Ha, these names. And it's like, all right, hold on. And then I actually looked up what Lil Jordan's daddy's name was. Lil Jordan Humphrey's daddy's name is like Marcus or something regular like that.
Right.
Man's name, real life, was L-I-L, apostrophe, Jordan Humphrey.
Do you remember a guy from Michigan State whose name was actually Lou Rawls? Like,
wait, what?
All one. All in one.
What?
Lou Rawls, yes.
No, I do not. Like, was he raised was he named after, like, a great-great-grandparent? Because, like, that happens nowadays. Like, you see somebody, like, in 2023 with a name like Gertrude, and you, like, you got to be named after your grandmother and your great-grandmother. You have to be. Because we retired the name Gertrude long ago.
Right.
Lou Rawls. Look.
Lou Rawls and his middle name, well, actually his nickname. I'm going to let you actually, you know what? We're going to do this in real time here. Here is the, check your DM real quick there.
Bet.
But yeah, Lou Rawls, he played for Michigan State. Obviously, he is a Bahamian former basketball player. Now he is the assistant coach for the Southern Utah Thunderbirds.
This man name really is Lou Rawls. Lou Rawls.
Look at his nickname too.
Wow, this is powerful right here. This is a lot.
Lou Rawls.
Yo, that's wild. So, looking at one of the questions in the chat, did y'all ever talk about Melo retiring? We did not talk about Carmelo Anthony retiring. We didn't. You know, and I think it's because it happened like right before the finals started, I believe. So I think that's why everybody kind of didn't get to it and why we didn't get to it. But like, to be honest, like the night before Melo announced his retirement, I was like, damn, has Melo retired yet? And then it hit me. The league retired him like legit like a year and change ago. You know, but a guy like Melo, I think people are going to remember him, and it's sad in some ways. People are going to always think about what Melo couldn't do or what Melo didn't do or what Melo didn't accomplish, you know, versus, like, appreciating what Melo was. What Melo was is one of the coldest scorers you've ever seen. You know, just it was smooth and it was easy the way Melo could just get a bucket from anywhere on the court. Like, you know how, Lamar, you know how a lot of people talk about Bun B?
Yeah.
And appreciate Bun B's skill at, like, rapping?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and nobody, you know, and it's like, yo, you put Bun on any beat, Bun got it. You want Bun to try any flow, he got it. You know what I'm saying? Like, this is easy. Like, you've never, like, in my life, I don't think I've ever heard a bad Bun B verse. Not nail one, right? And Bun is, like, your favorite rapper's favorite rapper. Carmelo is kind of like that for a lot of scores. You know what I'm saying? Like, yeah, maybe he didn't win a championship. Yeah, maybe he couldn't do this or couldn't do that. But what he could do, your favorite hooper is like, yo, Melo was my dude. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So, like, that's, man, for you, Lamar, which Melo was better? Braids in Denver Melo or New York Nick Melo?
I think Braids Melo, but then again, I see both. Like, honestly, Melo was one of my favorite players. And mainly because watching him play at Syracuse, that really opened my eyes up to a whole lot of college basketball around that time. Like, he's the only guy that gave Jim Boeheim a national championship and all that stuff, and, you know, zone and all that stuff there too. But like I said, I remember this was actually the first time I ever really, like, picked an NCAA bracket, and I just kept on hearing about Melo. And then, of course, I went with Syracuse at that point in time. And let's not forget, those Denver Nuggets teams, like, he really made Denver an actual good team, like, from the jump. Like, the Denver Nuggets used to be an afterthought to a lot of teams and to the whole NBA. And then Melo comes in there and actually had a pretty good time. And then let's not forget the years when they had him and Iverson on the team.
Yeah.
That was a fun team. They didn't play a lot of defense, but shoot, you had two of the best scorers in the NBA at that time. And it's crazy that, in a way, Melo's career kind of mirrored what Iverson's career was. You know, high volume scorer, guys that really weren't known, obviously, for their defense, but were really known for, you know, scoring a whole lot, carrying their teams and everything. And unfortunately for Iverson's case, he didn't want to come off the bench. But at least in Melo's case, at the tail end, he at least said, all right, well, I'll be willing to come off the bench, be like a hired gun, and really do a pretty solid job. And then, of course, those 2012-2013 Knicks teams, I mean, that's something that you're going to hold high in regard as well, because those are some fun teams as well.
Man, and, you know, I actually just remembered this just now. Carmelo Anthony should have won Rookie of the Year in 2003-2004. He should have, over LeBron James. Carmelo Anthony won Rookie of the Month every month of that entire NBA season, and somehow he did not win Rookie of the Year. That, my good folks, is a travesty. That is ridiculous. You know what I'm saying? Like, like, that one, it's been almost 20 years, and that one still mystifies me, like, how that happened, especially given the fact that Melo's team made the playoffs. Took them boys from winning 19 to 20 games to winning 43 or 44 in that first year he was in Denver.
Something like that.
So, we got another question. So, we have a new East-West matchup. Monty and the Pistons and Ime in Houston. Only two coaches left and one is Doc Rivers. So, you say only two coaches left and one in Doc Rivers. Like, who do we pick? Is that what you're saying, Mark? I may not quite be understanding the question.
I know Phoenix has a vacancy.
Still. Yeah, no. They just filled theirs with Frank Vogel. So they're gonna hire Frank Vogel, and I don't really know how I like what I think about that because it's like, okay, all right. It's just like, can he figure out something to do with DeAndre Ayton? Because that's why Monty Williams doesn't have that job anymore, because he was very clearly done with DeAndre Ayton, and you can't throw the number one, the former number one overall pick in the garbage disposal,
mm-hmm.
which Monty Williams seemed like he was about to do. So he up out of there. So if they can figure out something to do with DeAndre Ayton, and honestly, for Phoenix, they gave up so much in that Durant trade in terms of depth, giving up Bridges, giving up Cam Johnson. You know, Frank Vogel's calling card is defense. Who they got to play defense? Now, of course, the roster's not set in stone, but good individual defenders. Kevin Durant, where, you know, knees, ankles, like, he's a little bit old. Devin Booker, not known for being a great defender. Chris Paul, maybe on his last legs. Like, outside of Torrey Craig.
Literally.
Yeah, literally. He messed up that groin so much. I'm surprised that he's probably just on one leg. Shocked he ain't on one leg completely now. Right? Other than Torrey Craig, and I don't think the Okogie dude is that good. Who they got to play defense?
You know what this kind of reminds me, this kind of feels like with Phoenix?
What's up?
Shuffling up the cheers of the Titanic. Because this can't end well, can it?
I mean,
other than winning a championship, this can't end well, can it?
I mean, I don't think so. You know, like on paper, you know, the idea of Booker and Durant, you know, and having DeAndre Ayton down there, you know, if he's motivated and if somebody can get him, you know, get him going, you got them two dudes on the wing. And if Ayton is cooking, you can't double from the wings because you got Booker and Durant over there, you know. But if Chris Paul is cooked, which at this point I'm inclined to think he is, like he's fought off, you know, being washed for a while, but he is washed like a pair of church slacks. He's done. Like, at this age, I don't see him hitting the fountain of youth one more game. I just can't buy it. You know, so I do think this could end in disaster. Now, they could make a big move, get a couple of complimentary pieces that can play some defense. Then they might be cooking with something. But off the top of my head, like, in the West, you know, you know what I'm saying? Like, in the Western Conference, Luka Doncic in the – like, there's a team with Luka Doncic and Kyrie Irving on it, and none of us think they're a shoo-in to make the playoffs next year.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, you know, that's my thought. So, oh, Mark says the Bucks still need a coach. The Bucks hired Adrian Griffin or intend to hire Adrian Griffin. I think he was an assistant for the Raptors. Do I have that right, Lamar?
Yeah, he was an assistant for the Raptors. Also, former Maverick, by the way, from that 2016 that made it to the NBA Finals. And they also bringing in Terry Stotts, or at least intend to bring in Terry Stotts as the assistant.
Oh, okay. I mean, for Milwaukee, they need to get more athletic. You know, like, they might be the most unathletic team in the league. Legit. And they got Giannis on it. Like, they need to get a little bit more athletic. And, you know, but all in all, I think they should be okay. Now, here is something interesting I heard today. You know who's going to be one of the head assistants in Boston next year?
I think I heard about it, but I'm going to let you go ahead and tell the audience this.
E.T., Sam Cassell. Man, look. Oh, Mark says, Milwaukee, they have sneaky athletes. They ain't got no sneaky athletes. They just slow. Look. They got a whole lot of Christian Braun's out there. Over the slow white dudes, okay? But let this not go wrong. Let this not go well for Joe Mazzulla. Brad Stevens and them got a replacement already. Sam Cassell's warming up in the bullpen. They is getting ready to get Mazzulla up out the spot. I see it now.
Looks like the Raptors are the only ones that's trying to look for a head coaching job at this point.
I mean, the weird thing about getting head coaching jobs and people hiring coaches and things like that, especially when folks are making hires and hiring first-time coaches, I got no clue if they can coach. You know what I'm saying? If they're a good head coach, especially if they haven't been one before. So, like, Darvin Ham last year, I was like, people are like, oh, yeah, Darvin Ham's going to do all these other things and blah, 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 blah. I'm like, man, we've never seen him be the man in charge. So I have no clue what this man can or can't do. Maybe he's good, maybe he's not. Now, Darvin Ham acquitted himself quite well. Like, I came out of the end of that season extremely impressed with Darvin Ham. Like, you give him some dudes who can do a couple of things, he can make some shake. They send him out there with that group of G Leaguers at the beginning of the year, and I don't think the ghost of Red Auerbach could have made something happen with them cats.
Nah, not really. Not at all.
But we got to leave it right there because we are out of time here on the Game Plan Podcast live stream. Lamar Gaffer, my man, I thank you for hanging out with me. Where can the folks find all of your work?
Once again, you can find it again at sinlawpreps.com. We got some stuff coming up as well with some top five lists for football around here, and also some all Sinlaw stuff for track, for baseball, and for softball. You can also find my stuff on Scorebook Live, the Louisiana website, so you can also do that. And you can find me on Twitter at Lamar Gaffert, all in one word, at Lamar Gaffert, and on Instagram, Primetime2832.
All right. You can find me on Twitter at Alex Goodwin TSM. Again, that's on Twitter at Alex Goodwin TSM. That's T as in tacos, S as in sangria, M as in margaritas. Follow the show on Instagram at _TheGamePlanPodcast. Again, follow the show on Instagram at _TheGamePlanPodcast. Follow the show on our official YouTube channel, which you guys are watching the stream on right now as well. Again, like, share, subscribe, tell a friend to tell 10 friends to tell 10 more friends about the Game Plan Podcast. So, wherever you're listening and however you're listening and watching, we appreciate you guys for listening and watching. For Lamar Gaffert, my name is Alex Goodwin. This has been the Game Plan Podcast live stream. We will see you guys next time.